president.
Also in Australia for this occasion, the Australian-American Friendship Week, which commemorates the anniversary of the Coral Sea Battle in World War II, is her husband, Mr. Gibson, Lieutenant Commander Gibson, otherwise known as Hoot, who is over in Adelaide. And I must say that in my own personal judgment, had the president searched throughout the country, he could hardly have found a better person to represent him on the distant side than Dr. Seddon. Because after all, she's from Tennessee, which happens to be my home state.
Right.
I know you'll appreciate that. As you ask questions, would you identify yourself? Let us know which group or newspaper or radio station you're with. And with that, I'll just turn you over to Dr. Sim.
Lynn Halperin from the Space Association. Do you have any assignment at present, or do you foresee any assignment in the future?
I don't have an assignment to a specific shuttle flight yet. I hope to go sometime mid-next year. The folks from my group that were selected in 1978 are beginning their flight assignments, and all of us should be assigned by the end of this year to fly on flights through the end of next year. My husband is flying on flight 11 next January. He got a very early flight, and so I think I'm enjoying watching him train and trying to learn as much as I can from his training process. So I'll do a little bit better job when I finally get my flight assignment.
Is there a chance that you and your husband go on the same spacecraft?
There is. I don't think NASA has any rules against that. I don't think they have any policy for that at the present time. Of course, our first flight won't be made together, but we hope that perhaps someday they will send us on a flight together. We enjoy working together, and we think that would be quite an experience to be able to fly together.
Do you see any problems in such a flying space?
I don't think so. I think the only problem that I would see with it would be that my husband, after his first flight, would probably be the commander of any flight that I would go on, and he'd be the ultimate boss, and we have always been very much equal partners in everything else that we've done, and it might be difficult for him to be the supreme ruler, and I don't think he would really cause much of a problem, but it would be a different sort of situation, I think.
That's just vague to my head, but are there many other female astronauts up and coming?
Yes, there are. There are eight of us now in an office of 78 astronauts. The first woman astronaut will be going on this next shuttle flight, the seventh shuttle flight that's scheduled now, I believe, for June 15th. So we're going to answer all those questions about whether women are really capable of doing this with her flight in June.
Len Halperin again, Space Association. Will Sally Ride be doing any EVAs on that flight?
No, she doesn't have that assignment. Only two people on each flight are prepared to do EVAs or spacewalks. And in fact, most flights do not have planned EVAs. They are only done in case of an emergency. If you can't get the doors closed automatically, you can go out and close the payload bay doors. There are certain other things involved with the payloads that we carry that if you can't, for instance, can't get a satellite loose from the shuttle, it's hung up in some way, you can do an EVA to go out and free it. So there, most flights only have EVA as a contingency operation. Sally is not involved with that. One of her main tasks on this flight is a very important one. We assign one person on each flight to be at what we call a flight engineer. They sit between the pilot and the commander for launch and entry, read the checklist to them, figure out the malfunctions and call out the switch throws that have to be carried. It's a real honor for a scientist to be put in that position. In the past, we've had pilots serving as flight engineers, and Sally being a scientist, I think it's a great honor to her that she has become integrated well enough into the program to serve in a capacity as someone who's really assisting the pilot and commander during their flight. She also, of course, has payload responsibilities during the flight.
The eight ladies all undergo the same training? You all trained to the same degree?
Yes, I think so, and trained the same way as the men. I don't think there's been any discrimination in the jobs that we've had, the training that we've done. We spent the first year with NASA going through some sort of basic training, learning to fly jets, having science lectures, briefings on how the shuttle worked and that sort of thing. Since then, we are all assigned for approximately 6 months to follow a different area of the space shuttle and its development or procedures or specific flight, and then we all trade jobs after about 6 months, and the women have been integrated into that fully, and we've received the same sorts of job assignments as the men. Yes?
Mark Hillier, Space Association. Most of the male mission specialists from the Soviet mm-hmm. group have been assigned to flight at this mm-hmm. stage. Is it a deliberate policy to hold the women back just a little bit pending the results of, say, Sally's flight? Or just a matter of turned out?
We don't know how it turned out that more of the women are being assigned later. And I don't think it was done for any reason at all. It just worked out that way. Yes, sometimes flight assignments are based on just information that you happen to have, jobs that you happen to work in that, for instance, one of the doctors that was recently put on Flight 7, he was originally on the support crew for that flight, had gone through some of the training with them, and they decided at some point in time to put a doctor on board to study space motion sickness. And he just happened to have an MD degree and also know an awful lot about the flight. Many of our flight assignments work out that way. You just happen to have the special expertise that flight needs. And some of the women mission specialists, I don't know, for some reason it's been decided that we fit better into the later flights, I guess. And I think someone is looking down the line not only at the flights that are going now, but the flights that will be going in the future, and saying, okay, I have to fly this person early to fit them into this slot down here, and perhaps the women, they have something else planned for us down the line, so they're having to put us in certain areas now in order to fly us at a certain time later on. And we certainly hope that's the reason for it, that there's a master plan at work. Because we certainly don't feel that there's been any discrimination on the part of anyone. There was somewhat of a stir in higher management levels when it worked out that way, that there were proportionately more women who hadn't been assigned, but there certainly wasn't within our office. We enjoy the work and we feel like we're being treated fairly. We're just waiting for our turn like everybody else.
Was there an all-woman crew?
I'd love to have an all-woman crew. Someone said something about whether or not having more than one woman on a flight made the shuttle not obey Kepler's laws of motion, and we don't believe that to be true. And now that we have a fairly sizable number of women that haven't flown, we're hoping that they'll put more than one on a flight and perhaps have an all-woman crew and prove that that's workable, and we can certainly handle the jobs that there are to be done on the flight. And all of us are good friends, so we'd all like to fly together anyway.
Is there another question?
Well, I have one general question.
Mm-hmm.
Given Congress's reticence to fund the space program, mm-hmm. and given NASA's intention to try and get out of the space tracking business, what do you foresee as the future of manned space flight, certainly to the end of this century anyway?
Well, I don't know that Congress has been reluctant to fund the space program. I think that the rather poor economy that we've had in the past few years has sort of cut back on everything. I think the shuttle itself, the manned space program, has been very well treated. Unfortunately, they've had to cut NASA's budget in some places, and I think it's more the unmanned programs that have been cut, and everyone has squawked about that. because certainly we feel that they're important, but there's just not enough money right now to go around to all of them. Shuttle has been treated quite well. We have actually received, I think, as much as we've requested. Certainly everyone would like to get lots and lots more, but looking at it in the light of what the economy is doing, I think we have done quite well. The shuttle is sort of our main emphasis for the 1980s, I believe, and we have a lot of plans for them, a lot of different things lined up. After that, I think the next logical step is going to be a space station. It will be more or less a work platform, and we're trying to define with the shuttle exactly what we want to do with space. Now that we have the capability of getting up there and getting back, what is it that we can do with the vacuum of space or the weightlessness of space, whether it's manufacturing, solar power collectors, large antenna platforms that are tended by people out there. I think in the next few years we're going to define what it is we want to do with the space station, and the design of the station will follow that work that we're doing.
Other questions?
I might mention something that might be of interest to your readers and perhaps not as well known to you as to us in our space program. Our government has extended to the Australian government the invitation to fly an Australian with us, along with an Australian communication satellite that will be launched from the shuttle in 1985. And of course, the invitation was extended to your previous government, and the new government has yet to give us a formal reply. But we're hoping that that will be in the affirmative, and we'll get a chance to take an Australian with us into space. It's part of our effort to include people from different countries in our space program. It's not an invitation that's handed out to just everyone. We have extended the invitation to Canada and also to Brazil, but those are the only three countries that invitation has been given to, and the Australian would be the first, I think, to fly with us, and I think would add a unique perspective on our space program, and hopefully would assist Australia in developing things that might be flown on the shuttle.
Well, I did have another question. I could keep going here, but
if no one else hops in,
it was about the Australian. In reference to the last space mission, the satellite that was launched there didn't achieve its orbit, its desired orbit at the time, and my understanding is they're endeavouring to remedy that. Now, Australia's prime booking is for the shuttle.
Yes.
And what sort of guarantees are there that we can get our long overdue domestic satellite into its correct orbit? And what is the progress of that of Tigris at this stage?
Okay, I think if you will look at what's happened with the satellite that was launched on this last flight, everything was done perfectly from the standpoint of the people on board the shuttle. The shuttle carried it to where it needed to be. The crew performed magnificently in getting it launched on time. There was a malfunction in the satellite itself. NASA does not build a satellite. It's built by a commercial company. And things like that, they happen. It's a new satellite. It's a new kind of technology. And obviously, they've had some sort of malfunction. The last I heard, I think night before last, they did a test firing of the small jets that they have on board to boost the orbit. And as far as I know, that was successful. And we think, because we have redundancy built into these systems, that we'll be able to get the satellite to where we want it to go. We're learning more and more about building satellites each time we build one to be taken on board the shuttle. The fifth shuttle flight carried up two communication satellites, and they were launched on time in the right orbit, and as far as I know, they're up there and going to function well.
In the early days of the shuttle program, there was talk of a space tug, which would go beyond near Earth orbit.
Yes.
And give the program the feasibility to do repairs and refurbishments as far out as geosynchronous orbit.
Yes.
There's still any plans for that? Would we be able to go out ultimately and get geosynchronous satellite?
There That's still something that we would like to do. It's a question of again, money down the line, and saying that that's going to be a beneficial thing for us to do. I think that there are in work some designs for not a manned space tug, but a remotely operated booster type rocket that would go up and attach itself to the side of a satellite and bring it down into a lower orbit, and the shuttle could repair it, change batteries, do whatever had to be done, and put another booster on it to take it back up. Right now, I don't think we have any definite plans to do that, but I think that there are some design ideas in work. Of course, the 13th shuttle mission will be a repair mission. It will be done on the satellite that's, I think about 300 miles in altitude. It'll be as high as the shuttle has ever been. A rendezvous will take place. People will go out with backpacks on, fly out to the satellite to repair an electronics box on it, and hopefully repair a satellite that hasn't been functioning. So that is sort of an early step in satellite repair.
Dr. Stedner, a couple of radio stations would like to have a brief interview with you alone.
Sure.
Are there any further questions?
Any other?
Do you personally or does this sort of encourage interest in the Soviet nuclear program?
I think we have an interest in it. We have some people in our office who, not in the astronaut office, but who work with us in flight operations, who follow the Soviet space program as kind of a hobby and come up and brief us from time to time. You may have read, there's a book called Red Star in Orbit, I believe, Jim Oberg's book. He's one of a very few people that know that much about the Soviet program, and he's a good friend of ours and is around all the time, so we can go and ask him questions. That keep us abreast of what's going on in the Soviet program, and you know, we have enough trouble keeping up with our program to be able to keep up with theirs. But I think we're interested in it, although we don't follow it as closely as some other people do.
Fine. How long are you in Melbourne and how long are you in Australia?
I've been in Australia about 2.5 weeks. I just came to Melbourne today, and I'll be leaving to go back home tomorrow. I have a 9-month-old son. I haven't been away from him for more than a day at a time. And 2.5 weeks is about as long as I wanted to stay away, plus have an awful lot of work that's piling up on my desk back home. But I enjoy the country.
Okay. Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much.
I think they operate under the rules that say we will assume that you can handle any job that's assigned to you until you tell us that there's some problem with being able to handle that. And I don't think the women have had any trouble with anything that they've been assigned to do.
When are you scheduled to make your first space flight?
It'll be sometime the middle to the end of next year. I don't have a specific flight date yet, but the people at my level are being assigned now, and that will be for flights next year.
Was it a hard battle making it to this stage? Did you encounter any discrimination?
No, I don't believe that I have. I think the most difficult part of the whole program was being selected for astronaut training in the first place. It was a very competitive program. Began in 1977 with filling out reams and reams of paper applications. Then I believe there were about 9,500 people that applied at that point in time. About 210 of us were brought to group to NASA at the Johnson Space Center in groups of 20 for interviews, psychiatric and psychological exams, for very rigorous physical exams. Spent a week there, and from that number of people, then 35 of us were selected, and we began training in 1978. So I think that was really the toughest part, was getting through all of that, sort of wondering what kind of person would be accepted and what kind of person you ought to be, and all of us just had to be ourselves and hope we would make the selection.
Thank you very much. Tell me, have you read the Tom Wolfe book, The Right Stage?
Sure, all of us.
How factual is that? No,
I think it's one person's viewpoint on a thing, and I think for the... of course, I wasn't around in the Mercury days,
sure,
and I
sure.
haven't had much dealing with the Mercury astronauts. But the little I know about them, I think it probably was to a certain extent true, and he captured the spirit.
Sure,
I don't know about all the facts in the book, but the spirit of what went on as far as the Mercury folks. I think nowadays you can't be the rugged individualist that the Mercury astronaut was. You have to be a person who cooperates well and is part of a team, simply because we're working in very crowded conditions with a large number of people.
Is Chuck Yeager still around?
He's still alive.
He is.
Of course, I don't know where he is or whatever, but I'm sure he remembers those days well. He could probably tell you whether the book's factual or not.
Right. Can I just
thank you very much.
Ask you a little bit more about the future of Australia's role in the space program? What do you see as the role of Australia in the future of the space program?
Well, I think we regard our space shuttle as a real resource that we should share with all countries that are our friends, and we will be taking, of course, this Australian satellite up in 1985 and hope to take an Australian with that satellite. We also, of course, offer always the opportunity to researchers and scientists to propose experiments to be carried on board the shuttle. And those experiments go through a selection process and are flown as space becomes available. We have, of course, the what we call our little getaway specials. They're small, self-contained canisters that are carried in the payload bay on a space-available basis. Many times students, school districts sponsor these. They're not terribly expensive. I think $3,000 to $10,000 depending on the size of the canister. And I believe there's competition going on this month and next to select a couple of those to be flown on the shuttle. So I think Australia's participation can come in a number of different ways, and we're looking forward to a real cooperative effort in the future.
Do you see a time when Australia would send its own shuttle?
I think that would be wonderful. I think we would be happy to share our technology with them and assist them in any way we can, and as soon as they decide that that's what they want to do, I think that the assistance will be there and the friendship will be there as always.
Are you concerned about the militarization of space?
I don't think that space is any more militarized than it has been. I think that we have to look to all our possible means of ensuring a peaceful existence, and I don't think that the shuttle is going to harm things in any way. We have treaties that cover what we can and can't do with space.
Right. Okay, thanks very much for your time.
You're welcome.
Thank you for coming.
It's a pleasure.
I'd like to present you with this from the Space Association. It's a little known in the newsletter.
Thank you.